Welcome to Real World Rewind, Episode 2, where we're working our way through Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy. This time, we're talking about the second installment of the series, The Two Towers. And joining me is Real World Theology's very own Josh Crabb. Thanks for coming on, Josh.
Hey, thanks, Blaine. I am ready for my short-distance sprint on the shorter show. I am not made for long distances, just like dwarves.
Very good. And to quote Theoden, so it begins. Josh and I promised nice. To do our best to keep this from turning into a discussion about Star Wars, but we can't make any guarantees.
We guarantee nothing.
Exactly. So one of the things that I really want to emphasize in Real World Rewind, even though we're only two episodes in, is that as a whole, our love for certain types of movies is typically fueled by an intensely personal connection to them. And I want to start off by having Josh talk a little bit about his personal relationship with these films. I talked about my relationship with Lord of the Rings and my connection to it in episode one. So if you want to know more about that, you can go back and check that out. But Josh, what's your personal connection to The Two Towers specifically, and then the series as a whole?
Well, to The Two Towers specifically, I don't even remember where I first actually saw this movie. It was like 2002, so it would have been like right as I was transitioning from from high school to college. Is that right? Yeah, 2002. I can't remember when I went to college. Like I said, I don't even remember where I first saw this movie, but it must have been in my first year at college. It would have been my senior year of high school. So I must have seen this with my friends or my parents or something, but as it pertains to The Two Towers, this is probably not a popular opinion, but I've always liked The Two Towers more than the other two movies.
Thank you.
And, you know, if you look at like IMDb, it's, you know, rated number 15 in the top movies of all time, rated according to IMDb's 250. Take that with a grain of salt. But it's below Fellowship of the Ring and Return of the King. You know, and obviously Return of the King won an Oscar, but I honestly kind of feel like this was nominated for Best Picture, but I feel like that this movie probably has a slightly better case to win Best Picture than Return of the King does. And so I've always liked this one the best. So my personal connection with is that I keep my mouth shut when people talk about the movies because everyone's like, oh, Return of the King is the best one. And I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, I really like, even though The Two Towers uses a lot of material from the other two books, I think it does a masterful job of doing that and is really my favorite. So I don't know. My personal connection, I guess going beyond that, maybe to the series as a whole, is that I grew up with the Lord of the Rings novels. My mom had this really super old paperback box set of The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And so it was like, even in the late 80s, early 90s, it was like yellowed. And so it was issued in like the early 70s is when that box set came out that my mom had. So I read those books. I used to steal my mom's books all the time when I was growing up and read them. Cause I loved reading those books. The Lord of the Rings books. She had like tons of Michael Crichton books, that kind of stuff. So, nice. I grew up with Lord of the Rings and I loved Lord of the Rings. And so when I knew that they were coming out with movies, I was going to be, you know, one of the first people in line to see that. But probably the greater connection that I have to Lord of the Rings as a whole, as a movie trilogy, is I had a very large or not a large group, but making myself sound more important than I actually am. So it was like three or four other guys that we all loved Lord of the Rings when we were in college. And all but one of us had had become Christians when we were freshmen in college and we were all in the same dorm. So we love it. We spent like every day together. And shortly after I got married, we loved Lord of the Rings. We'd watched it before. But shortly after I got married, I was the first one in that group of friends to get married. My wife went on a road trip with two of her friends from college. And so I had our apartment and our cat all to myself. So I invited the dudes over. And we sat down with the extended, this was like 2005, probably early 2000. I think it was winter. So it was probably like January, February 2006. So all of the movies were out and all the extended editions were out by then. And so we sat down. I made like from scratch beef stew and like a bunch of other cool stuff. And we drank lots of soda and Blue Moon Belgian wheat beer. And we watched Lord of the Rings from start to finish, all extended editions, for just a day. Like I had the day off from work and they did too. And so we did that all day long.
That's crazy.
And it was incredible. It was, not like we hadn't done things like that in the past. Like we had watched the entire series Band of Brothers together one day. So that was like 10 plus hours of watching that, but we sat down and we watched all of them. And it's like a fond memory I'll always have of those friends. And that is a very personal connection, is like during a very formative time of my life, which was college, Lord of the Rings was like part of the currency of our friendship. So, that's essentially my connection, is I've kind of always had Lord of the Rings as a part of my life. And returning to these movies, after a while of not having watched them, just because I'm trying to watch other stuff I've never seen before, it's always refreshing and reminds me of why these movies are all in like the top 20 of IMDb's ratings, because they're awesome and they're so much fun and so cool.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's been so much fun for me to sit down with my wife and get to rewatch these and re-experience this and experience it for the first time since we've been married, and it's great. And in addition to the sort of family connection that I have to this, I mentioned in episode one that I saw all of these movies in the theater with my dad, who's passed away. And so that's still it's special to me for that reason. But also a fun little thing I did was I bought these movies on Blu-ray when they came out in the extended edition.
Okay.
And I got them and I was ready to see them, but I was in college at the time and I was about to go home on winter break or summer break. It was one of the breaks. And so I didn't have time to watch them before I went home. So I went home and we had a really big TV in our living room. And so I got to watch them with my grandmother. Actually, I forced her to watch them, and she's not a fantasy person at all, but she ended up loving them. And so that's cool. Another great memory that I have with these movies.
Awesome.
But we're also kindred spirits, because I too think that this is the best, or it's certainly my favorite of the trilogy.
That's so interesting, because I rarely come across other people who share that sentiment.
Exactly. I was really excited to hear you say that. And actually, the next question I had for you was, how would you rank them? But obviously, we would both put it at number one. But
right.
You mentioned that you sort of want to make a case for the Two Towers being the best. And I think I can do that in just a couple of sentences, and then I'll let you do that and more.
Okay.
Because for me, with it being my personal ranking of Lord of the Rings, all I have to say is none of the other movies have the Battle of Helm's Deep.
that is so true.
So that kind of does it for me. Go ahead and make your case for the Two Towers being the best.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say from purely now, you know, because you can't, when you read the books, it's hard to make the judgment like, oh, this is my favorite book, because it feels like one continuous story. It's a little bit different when you approach a movie, just because, you know, a movie has a definite beginning and end, whereas like a book, you know, you set it down every now and then. I mean, unless you're insane and read The Lord of the Rings without, like, I don't know, like you just like got some of those things from like Clockwork Orange and kept your eyes open till you could finish it. but, you know, You when you read a book, you put it down, you think about it, that kind of stuff. But when you watch a movie, it's an experience, and you watch it from beginning to end. And I feel like The Two Towers, more than any other one, has a strong beginning, has a strong middle, and has a strong end. Whereas, like, the, you know, Return of the King makes me cry every time I watch it. But the ending is very obviously it's dragged out, you know, just like kind of the end of the book is, you know, dragged out. But again, you know, you read the prologue, or you read the stuff after the epilogue, excuse me, and you get to the that you're not reading it all in one sitting like you would when you're consuming a movie. And so in my opinion, the Two Towers really from beginning to end is strong. Is I mean, it's kinetic. Like, the whole movie is very kinetic. Like, it's constantly moving. And I mean, it's true, just because you're in a place where they're all traveling to a place, and then it ends where they all come to, mostly everybody comes together in this epic battle that ends. And Helm's Deep is just, it seriously is. I mean, like the charge at the end of towards the end of, see, I say the end of Return of the King, but it's not the end, because there's like another hour after it.
Right.
So, you know, it's, I can't remember Pelennor Field. That's it. But the Battle of Pelennor Field, at the end of Return of the King, I mean, is epic, but Helm's Deep is emotional. It's tense. Like, you've read the books, you know it's going to happen, but you are still tensed up. Like, are they actually going to beat this orc army that's just, you know, bearing down on them?
Right.
And then the, I mean, I guess we could talk about Helm's Deep more in a little bit. But my case is that it's kinetic, it's interesting, it's fun. It's probably the best interaction you get between Legolas and Gimli, which is a really fun interaction. Right. You kind of lose that in the last film. And it's just, all around, it's great. I mean, I'm not even touching on the fact that Frodo and Sam's relationship is probably at its best and most tense in these times. And it's just, overall, in my opinion, it's the best story. It's the best beginning, middle, and end. And it's just, is a complete package, it's the best one. So there you go. Yeah. It wasn't three sentences, but hopefully that makes sense.
No, I think you made the case. And for all of our listeners, come at us in the comments or in the Facebook group and let us know why we're crazy for feeling this way. But yeah, we're both on the same page. That makes me really, really happy to find a kindred spirit.
Hooray!
Yeah, a couple of tidbits that I wanted to kind of throw everyone's way, because I've been watching a lot of the bonus material and supplemental material in the extended edition, which there's hours and hours of bonus material. But there are a couple of things that I found really fascinating in watching some of the special features for Two Towers. One was that they talked about how the choreography team worked endlessly to create 10 distinct fighting styles for all of the different races that were fighting at Helm's Deep and throughout the rest of the movie. So if you actually watch it again and you watch for that, you can see that the different races, different creatures, even different races of orc fight in different styles. And that's that level of detail, that commitment to detail is pretty remarkable. One reason that these movies have lasted so long and are so iconic.
Yeah,
but another really cool thing, and Josh will appreciate this. This is really just a way to get us talking about Star Wars, because that's what we really want to do.
Of course.
Yeah, exactly. Peter Jackson brought in Bob Anderson, who's a swordplay expert.
Yeah.
To help do a lot of the swordplay choreography. And Bob Anderson, among other things, is really famous for being the person who was in the Darth Vader costume in Episode 4 of Star Wars fighting Alec Guinness as Obi-Wan. And he's the one responsible for creating all of these amazing sword fighting routines that you've seen. So now let's talk about Star Wars Rebels. But
isn't that a great show?
It is. It's a great show. By the way, Josh and I do recaps of every Rebels episode, so check that out. See how I work that in.
It's very nice.
No, but that was a great defense of the movie, and there's a couple of tidbits for you. But now that we've talked about a little bit about what the film means to us personally, let's dive into some of the rich thematic content that's in The Two Towers. So, yeah. Josh, is there anything that maybe sticks out to you on a thematic level that you may not have noticed in previous viewings, or just hit you particularly hard for, you know, whatever situation you find yourself in now or anything like that?
you know, maybe it's just because I haven't talked about Frodo and Sam very much. And I think that everybody, you know, they kind of go to Helm's Deep as being sort of, it is the climax of the movie. It is very much, you know, that story kind of drives it. But, you know, on subsequent viewings, but probably some more of the recent viewings that I've had, I think I've come to, and I should say back in college, this was always really, I always loved this about the Two Towers, was just, was the relationship between Frodo and Sam is just, it's some of the best cinematic friendship that's ever happened on screen. Like, and the most, it's like the most inspiring, you know, to like yes. have real friendships. It's not like, you know, it's not some like goofy buddy cop sort of pairing that can be a good friendship. This is like, this like inspires you to have really good friends. And so something that I really enjoy about that movie is sort of like the idea of just like shouldering each other's loads or bearing each other's burdens. Like, you know, I hate, like, Lord of the Rings has almost reached a status of like being off limits to pastors when it comes to using them as illustrations and sermons. But that is one of the best sort of disseminations of Galatians 6, which talks about bearing one another's burdens. And that's Sam dealing with Frodo, you know, and Frodo's like genuine appreciation. Like one of my favorite pieces of dialogue from that film is where, you know, Sam is sort of wondering and thinking aloud, like, I wonder if they'll talk about, you know, us, or they'll have stories about us. And it's like, you know, he says like, oh, you know, they'll gather around the fire and be like, tell me the one about, you know, Frodo and Sam. And he'd be like, oh, yes, son, that's one of my favorite stories. And then Frodo kind of he turns to Sam and he says like, but you forgot about one of the most important characters. You forgot about Samwise the Brave. You know, he was my favorite character of all. And, you know, Sam kind of gets bashful. He's like, oh, you shouldn't, Frodo, you shouldn't kid about those kind of things. I was being serious. And he's like, why? You know, he's like, I was being serious too, Sam. And it's just this great moment of like, Sam doesn't take himself seriously, but Frodo encourages him in that moment. And then, you know, he kind of walks away. He's like, Samwise the Brave. And it's kind of like, yeah. And I love that interaction because it's, you know, it's kind of playful, but it's really fun. And also it's really inspiring at the same time. And I love their relationship. I mean, I wish I could probably talk about every scene that they have together. And just how there's the pull of Smeagol and Gollum in that movie too. And yeah. Won't even have time to talk about how great Andy Serkis's performance is in that movie and how, you know, the Gollum and Smeagol thing is incredible. And obviously that's groundbreaking what he was doing in that movie. But that's something that I've been coming back to a lot more as I sort of maybe, you know, as I was thinking about what themes could I really be thinking about, I'm inspired by their relationship together.
I can kind of say something that riffs off of that and kind of fits to my own circumstances. And, I think that this idea or this theme that you see in all of the films, but I think you see especially well in the Battle of Helm's Deep in the Two Towers. And by the way, Aaron White said that he wanted us to talk about Helm's Deep for 30 minutes straight. So as you can see, I'm doing my best to work that into every bit of conversation we have.
I think we've been doing our best to try and not talk about it the whole time.
this idea of corporate identity, and so it's this idea that the people at Helm's Deep are able to survive and succeed in this battle where they're vastly outnumbered solely because the object and the source of their hope is outside of themselves, right? They're not looking within, pulling themselves up by their bootstraps. They have a corporate identity. Yeah. All of these different races and ethnicities that are coming together. You got dwarves, elves, men, right? They're all working together, and they're part of a larger whole. And in the Two Towers, people who cut themselves off from this sort of corporate identity, you can think again about like Smeagol, they don't survive. They're the ones that have problems when they cut themselves off from the group. This seemed really relevant to me now, too, especially because of our current election season. And I'm not going to make this about politics at all, but in America, we are constantly encouraged to identify with this sense of rugged American individualism, right? We can do everything on our own, pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps. So it's difficult for us, I think, as Americans, myself included, or myself most of all, to imagine ourselves as part of a unified body, a whole, something larger than ourselves. But the cool thing is, this is exactly what God has called us to do by way of his church, right? Revelation talks about the church as a people group of every tribe, tongue, and nation, all unified in one person, Jesus Christ. And so this time, I think really more so than any other time I've watched it, this movie encouraged me to cherish my local church and the people in my local church in a way that maybe I don't as much as I need to. And I found that really encouraging and also really searing and insightful, which is what I think these movies do really, really well.
Yeah. And their hope ultimately, like you said, not being pulled up by their own bootstraps, like even then, you know, like the hope of them winning the Battle of Helm's Deep comes from outside again in what I would say is like, probably when I think of the picture of like what the second coming of Christ might look like, I think of like Gandalf charging down the mountainside with the Rohirrim.
Yeah.
And just sort of like this just white light and just, you know, overcoming the darkness and just sweeping through the dark horde and bringing, bringing restoration to this Helm's Deep area. And it's like, whenever I think about that, that scene is so stirring and so incredible. And even the thing before it, where it's kind of like, you know, they're waiting for that hope and it's like, we have no hope left, but basically to just turn around and give ourselves over to the fact that like Gandalf is supposed to be coming, yeah. You know, he said the light of the fifth day. And so we're just going to charge out and last as long as we possibly can. And it's, when I think about it, like you mentioned Revelation, I think of like, that is part of it too, just this hope of restoration and the hope of like fighting and not giving up to the very last man. And I just, that whole scene that I can't even call a scene, it's like the whole sequence, like the whole last third of the movie is just this incredible. And it's even like the ends, like even creation like rebels against the dark hordes and yeah. Like, you know, sweeps in and it's like all, and you just think like all of creation is crying out. And like, even if we won't do anything about it, like, you know, it's incredibly amazing. That last scene, I just think they captured Tolkien's imagination there almost better than they did anywhere else in the entire series.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's so great.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, I don't think I've ever really thought about that. Scripture saying that creation groans in longing for redemption, and you hear all this groaning from the Ents, literal groaning from them as they wail in the forest.
And they can't remember what endwives look like.
Yeah, yeah. That's really good. So since we haven't talked about it at all, before we sort of transition our way out, because 30 minutes goes by really fast, I don't have an answer to this, but we talk a lot about the Battle of Helm's Deep, and that's what everyone mentions, even if they don't think the Two Towers is the best. So even if they're wrong,
right.
Joking, even if they don't think the Two Towers is the best, they still love the Battle of Helm's Deep. Everybody loves it. We're going to get that one person who's like, no, I hate that. It's terrible. But we think it's compelling. It's perhaps the most compelling and intense sequence in the entire trilogy. I think we would both agree with that. Why do you think it appeals to people so much? Any final thoughts on that?
I just think that first of all, it perfectly captures Tolkien's imagination and is probably the one of the best, like I said, one of the best sort of disseminations of like what the second coming of Christ could look like. And I think that speaks to like hope, that speaks to restoration, that speaks to things that like, again, creation and all humankind like groans for. And I think it's just really inspiring too. You know, just the whole concept of banding together, like you were talking about, in community and fighting off this impending, like creeping darkness of the orc hordes, and you know, just the waiting for hope, and it seeming like hope has not answered you, and just basically putting it all on the line. We're going to charge out and we're going to be inspirational. I think, like, more than any speech that a coach, football coach, could ever give, that is more inspirational. They might as well just show that before every football game. And I'm sure that they, you know, football players would go out and tear each other apart because they'd be so inspired. So, I think that that battle, and it's, you know, also it's really compelling, the entire thing. And I'm not just saying that scene either, but the whole thing from beginning to end is incredibly compelling and so well done. Like, I even think of, you know, having the orc hordes like sort of pound and scream and stuff like that. You know, how Peter Jackson got like a whole rugby stadium to, you know, imitate the orc language. Yeah. And yell it, like, and it's just, and there was the attention to detail. There was, like, and they essentially pitched the two towers on this scene.
Yeah.
So they put everything they had into this scene. And so I think that it really is just, from inspirational standpoint, from capturing Tolkien's imagination and to just perfect execution of every element, is why it makes it so great. So, I mean, there's really no argument for that, people. So if you think differently, you've just been shut down permanently.
No, those are great points. And I think another thing that they do really well, that Jackson does really well, is he sets up the battle. So many times in these movies where you're going to have this huge clash of two forces, it's just seeing two groups of people run at each other and a bunch of cool choreography. And it is cool choreography. But here, we actually get the setup where we see this battle plan, and we understand before the battle starts, oh, okay, they've got a line up on this wall. There's a trench down at the bottom that, you know, we don't want the orcs to get into because that could destroy the wall. We understand exactly what's going on. So it never just sort of resorts to being this mindless clashing of forces. We always know that there's something real at stake at every single moment. And that just draws us in, and it makes it feel real to us.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well, that will just about conclude our time here. Thanks for listening.
Aww.
I know. It is amazing how fast 30 minutes goes. I want to give us a few social media plugs. So you can find me on Twitter at @DEPT_of_tourism, because I like to make it as hard as possible for you to find me. And Josh, where can we find you?
Well, I am on Twitter as well. My Twitter handle is Hey, It's That Josh. Mine's not complicated. It's pretty easy. So you can find me readily on Twitter. I almost never use Twitter except to promote the stuff that I write, because I'm confused and baffled by Twitter sometimes. And as is per the usual of me being on any episode of Real World Theology, and now Rewind as well, you can find me on Letterboxd, my official sponsor. And I am the official spokesperson of Letterboxd. So if you're not on Letterboxd, get on there. And all of my writing that I do pretty much all the time is on Real World Theology. Perhaps you've heard of it.
Yeah, maybe so. You can also find me on Letterboxd XD. I think I'm on there like once a year. So... Yeah.
We're working on you, man. We're working on you.
Right.
Once they get the app, that's your excuse. So once they come out with an app, you're in trouble because you have to be on.
Exactly. And also, don't forget about our Real World Theology Facebook group, which is different from just liking our page. There's actually a discussion group you can go and join. And we really like to have people come in there and share movie news, or heck, talk with us about the podcast or whatever. Just talk movies with us. So look us up and join our Facebook group. Next episode, that will be episode 3, we are going to be talking about, can you guess? We're going to be talking about Return of the King. So come back the 15th of next month. Thanks for listening, and bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
See ya.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!